So here we go again.
Welcome back.
Hello.
Welcome back. It's exhausting.
It is exhausting. I'm up to my fourth cup of coffee.
Sean ate a whole entire large pizza earlier.
Okay, you ate a large pizza
I did. And after this coffee, I might regret it.
Do you know what Glenn's been calling you behind your back?
Do tell.
Fatty Fatty Jarrett.
Oh, crying.
Jarrett Fat Boy, that's what he's been saying. Laughing under his breath.
Yeah. Sorry, man.
Geez, 2016, I've got to get myself some fitness regime.
2016 off to a shit start.
It is, right? It is.
Well, this is the FakeChimp.net podcast.
First you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
10. 9.
I'm going to amp the baby up, see how it sounds.
7. 6. 4. 3. Two, one, 5.
Right, so my number 5,
here we go,
is It Follows.
Oh, wow, what an exceptional fucking film.
I know where this is fucking
great
going.
Movie.
Well, it is. Obviously, it made my list, so I fucking love this film. And everyone has been touting it as a minimalist film, which is precisely what it
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
Precisely why I liked it. It is a film that just relies on its atmosphere. There is nothing that actually happens, which is what I loved about it.
Absolutely. It's there's very little on-screen gore for what is a horror film. It's suspense driven.
Yeah.
It's got a brilliant soundtrack by Disasterpiece. It's got great performances. Right.
Now I suspect you're going to want to talk about this
later. I'll talk a little bit more
about
it later.
So let's save that discussion for then, right? But I know there's going to be some conflicting views on this one. So.
All right, well, we'll save that for a little later.
I can't wait.
There we go.
All right. Okay, so me? Yep.
I've got... Now, I know what you guys are going to go. Was that this year or was that last year? Well, it's this year, motherfuckers, because it was released theatrically in January. It's Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
There you go.
Yeah.
Great film.
Now, like, did this get...
No, not on my list. I did the whole last year.
And this was almost an oversight for me until I was talking to someone that had watched it earlier this week and said how much they thought they were going to love it and were just disappointed, saying this is the kind of film that if you don't enjoy, you feel like people will say to you, you just didn't get it.
Yeah.
And I went, it is probably one of those type of films.
I think that is such a cop-out.
It's a total cop-out.
I hate that excuse.
You know what? I think
you're just too stupid to get it.
No, I think the reason so many people didn't like it is because it was promoted like a superhero movie. Mm. Like, the trailer played out like he was a Birdman.
Yeah.
Right? It did. And I think I've had that feedback from my customers saying, well, is this a comic book movie?
Right.
You know,
right.
And I think that's a lot of the general movie
and
goer
I think
has
there's
that in
some
mind.
People that watch it and they really don't like the aspect of not knowing if what is happening is within his own mind or whether it is legitimately happening. And they don't like, they kind of want it a little bit more tighter and want to know at the end,
I think,
how does this end? Why is it left to interpretation? Yeah.
Plus the whole one-shot aspect to it.
Brilliant.
No, but that really grades on a lot of people.
Oh, so
not
incredible.
Us. We love that stuff.
Yeah,
but
we love that. That's the brand.
But you know what I mean? Like a lot of people, awesome. That would be like 10 minutes okay, but then hang on, we're 45 minutes into this and it's the same shot.
It just never feels like it never lets up. Just it's constantly moving right down to the drums. Like just
it's
grounding,
great.
Heart pumping.
I haven't seen it. No. Alejandro Iñárritu films do nothing for me.
You didn't like 21 Grams.
I honestly, just some filmmakers speak to some people. This guy speaks to people.
Are you going to watch The Revenant?
I will watch The Revenant purely because Tom Hardy's in it, and I will watch Tom Hardy read a phone book happily.
Right.
But his films to me, they don't talk to me, they don't touch me, they don't. I watched Amoris Peros, took three goes to get through it. It just did nothing for me. I watched 21 Grams, took me two goes to get through it. I couldn't do it. And since then, I started on Babel.
Babel, I
couldn't get through it. Avoided Beautiful and avoided Burnt.
Are you going to give this a shot?
Look, it's one of those ones I want to watch it because
I've heard... Michael Keaton.
Well,
that's Michael Keaton. You've got to see Michael Keaton.
But I've heard so much about... You know, the technical proficiency of it.
Yeah, amazing.
That it has to be seen for that regard.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, given the track record that I have with the director, it's just...
Well, I reckon, forget that. I reckon go for the technical aspect, but also go for the whole Michael Keaton looking back on his career kind of aspect.
That's getting stale as well. It is, I mean, like, we even mentioned Manny Lewis. Manny Lewis does that. The wrestler does that. There's all these. It's becoming old hat now as well. So it's like,
I get that.
Just nothing on it that kind of, you know, like,
I don't think it can be done too many times when it's done well. You know, yeah, like, and
for an actor like Michael Keaton who didn't want to return to the Batman franchise for the third chapter, and it's addressed in this film with the degree of him not wanting to come back, I kind of like that. It's kind of like a bit of closure on it.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. I'll check it out.
But that's number five for me. Cool. I think it was a very different film, and it's an acquired taste, and it blows my mind that it picked up so many Academy Awards, including Best Picture last year at the Academy Awards, because it's just, I don't know how that actually happens. Yeah. People said to me, the Grand Budapest Hotel won't win Best Picture, and I said, yeah, it may not, but Birdman probably won't either. And Birdman fucking won.
If anything,
Grand Budapest seemed to me like a more contender. More viable. It was more accessible. But okay, moving on to you, Sean. What do you got there at number five?
My number five is a Russian film called Leviathan.
Of course it is.
You seen it?
No, we talked about this.
This is the one with Peter Weller, the underwater one?
This is...
No, but we talked about this last podcast after we recorded.
Because I
love the film he did, the director did.
I'm not even going to bother trying to pronounce his name. It's just like a handful of
Go ahead.
Make yourself look stupid.
Alejandro.
Yeah, exactly. But this one is this beautiful, languid, slow burn film about this everyman called Kolya, who is being forced out of the home that he built with his family, so that this corrupt mayor can come in and sort of use the land and do whatever he wants. And he mounts this battle against this corrupt mayor. Right? Doesn't sound particularly cinematic. And as far as stories go, it's not particularly cinematic. But again, it's one of those, in my opinion, peerless acting for the year. You would be very hard pressed to find any on-screen performance that comes close to any cast member in this film. It is so precise, it is so calculated, it is just devastating and heartwarming and beautiful. You have to see it. It's gorgeous.
I haven't seen it, but knowing his other films, particularly The Return, he's the kind of filmmaker that can make nothing beautiful.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like, he takes a story that, in the previous example, really went nowhere.
Hmm.
Like, and it's just how the characters deal with where they are at that time.
Exactly,
and
right.
The way
just
he shoots
everyman. He's just a mechanic.
Yeah.
But you are transfixed by this guy.
And they look Russian. Like, there's a cold starkness.
There's a hardness to the film that... you're right. You could probably just look at any beautiful frame in it and just think that kind of looks Eastern blockish, like you have to see it. Like, if not for any other reason, like I said, just for the pureness.
It's one of those movies that sits on my shelf at my shop, and people keep recommending it to me, and I'm like, I just haven't got to it yet. You know,
jaw dropping.
Yeah,
get to it.
I will.
Four.
So my number four is Ant-Man.
Hello.
I thought this might be. It's an honorable mention.
It's an honorable mention.
Okay,
for me.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, because I'm not a fan of the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
I like it. I don't love it. But this one is a standout above all else. Like, this to me is the best Marvel film to date.
I agree. I'm with you.
It really is. And I like the fact that it plays to the family friendly dynamic and the demographic. And it's funny as hell.
So fun.
Paul Rudd's perfectly cast.
Absolutely.
I had no idea how they were going to do this one, but the fact also that they presented both Ant-Mans, because in the comic book universe there's two, which Michael Douglas plays the first and Paul Rudd the second. The fact they covered both those stories.
Absolutely.
Clever. Just really clever. And I walked away from that one like I did with something like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah.
You know, there's that real...
Such childlike wonderment during the movie.
Particularly the final act, which is absolutely gobsmacking.
Cutting between the reality that they're in, Ant-Man versus the villain, and the reality of the world outside of that,
you
know, full-scale, real life. It's just incredibly well-cut action sequence.
Yeah, you got to take your hat off to Marvel. Fun. On the outset, it doesn't look like a film that really should succeed in any way, shape, or form.
No way.
It's a film about a fucking guy that can turn into the size of an ant, right? How do you make that exciting? But god damn it, they did.
Yeah.
And it's amazing for it.
And they better introduce him into the fucking Avengers universe now.
Well, no, he's going to be part of Captain America Civil War.
Excellent.
He comes into the first part of that because that's a two-parter.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's his introduction to the Avengers from there onwards.
Great.
So,
it's about time.
I couldn't imagine anyone else really playing this part, having that amount of charisma and, you know, actually pulled off all the action. So, you know, I've never seen Paul Rudd in an action film.
No, not at all.
He did everything extremely well. Ant-Man.
Really well made, and yeah, like I said, it's Marvel have outdone themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so moving on to number four. I thought we were just doing a long pause. I thought we were doing that. Well, very cinematic. Was, take the lightsaber.
The words hung in the air the way a brick wouldn't. Yeah.
Let's ponder that. Well, I move on to number four.
Number four.
Which no doubt didn't make either of your top tens. Maybe not even on your honorable mentions. While We're Young. Directed by Noah Baumbach.
Yeah, no, I didn't like it very much.
I love the movie. Again, I love the screenplay, the way that Noah Baumbach's written the characters. And I'm not a massive fan of his films having... His previous film, Francis Ha, I downright hated a black and white film.
Pretentious.
And just pretentious. Yeah. It was fucking awful. And it makes me worried about seeing his new film, Mistress America, because it's the same lead actress that I think he's with for a name now. And anyway, but moving back to While We're Young, Ben Stiller, I could completely identify with him, this man, and
yeah, no,
point in his life, and he's struggling to make this documentary.
But that is relevant to his... The whole concept.
Absolutely. Adam Driver.
Adam Driver was the revelation in that one.
You liked him to begin with, but as his character unfolds, you just absolutely loathe this guy. He's everything that is wrong.
But talk about an unexpected talent in like a dramatic sense. Like, absolutely. Who would have thought he would come along and be
It's true. I mean, you know, outside of Girls, I haven't seen him in a heap of things, mainly sort of light comic kind of roles.
Yeah.
Got another film I've got to see called Hungry Hearts. And
I swear to God, I thought you were going to go, he's got another film I have to see called Star Wars.
You may have heard of Force Awakens.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, While We're Young, exceptional midlife drama? Midlife crisis drama.
It's a midlife crisis drama. Comedy drama.
Comedy drama with a strong emphasis on the drama.
I built this one up in my mind too much because we saw the trailer.
Yeah.
And both of us were like, we have got to see this.
Because a trailer that is a bit more of a comedy.
Yeah. And the trailer played very much so damn well. We had that Paul McCartney song playing. Yeah. It was just the beat was great. But it just let... I felt let down.
I loved it. I walked out of that movie. What's his name?
Beastie Boys.
Adam Horowitz.
Yes.
Horowitz? Mm, yeah.
Right.
And him knocking Ben Stiller when he starts wearing the hat.
Yeah.
He was infamous for wearing the backward baseball cap throughout the late 80s and early 90s. Great. But no, he was great too because watching, I didn't even realize it was him until I jumped on IMDb and was looking at the cast list and I went, no. What?
Yeah.
For real? Shit, that's cool.
Yeah,
very cool. But yeah, no, I loved it. Okay, so number four for you, my good man?
Number four for me was Adam Wingard's The Guest.
Right, yes.
Which, this is a contentious one because it was actually released in America when I was there last year, but it didn't get released here until this year.
Yep,
so that's true.
I'm going here.
That's safe.
Yes, yeah. It actually played Myth in August.
Did it?
July, August.
But one of those, like, there's these fringe guys working sort of in the realm of horror on the outside. Adam Wingard, Ty West, the Soska sisters, they're kind of pushing the boundaries a little bit of, you know, the mainstream.
David Robert Mitchell. Director of It Follows.
That's right.
He's pushing those.
He could be in that group. But Adam Wingard is one of the better ones for my money.
And he directed Your Next.
That was the one before that, which was also written by Simon Garrett. Mm. They've become like this kind of buddy-buddy partnership, and it seems to be working really well. But The Guest, I didn't expect it to be as good as it was. This kind of throwback 80s horror action.
Favorite word, throwback.
Throwback, it is. That's what this is. The 2015 is the year of the throwback.
Yeah.
It's funny, it's horrific, it's thrilling.
I was with this film for the first maybe 45 minutes and then I kind of lost interest. And I don't want to spoil it for anyone that's listening, but it builds to a certain point and then it heads in this certain direction. The lead character, there's a bit of guessing as to, you know, where he's come from, if his story's legitimate, and then you find out the backstory for him. And once that kind of comes out, it's full steam ahead.
Just goes full tilt.
It kind of turns into... mainly an action movie almost, like a really unrelenting action film.
Even Wingard and Garrett themselves said that he's the Terminator.
Yeah, well, pretty much.
Which is pretty much exactly what he is. Like, you know, we're talking here, but we haven't explained the plot about a returned soldier from a war who shows up at this family's doorstep and said, "I was best friends with your son," and he gave me his final words to pass on to you. And he kind of weasels his way into this family unit. And he, on the outset, is everything this family needs. He helps them with all their problems. He advises them when they need advice. And then things just, piece by piece, start turning a little darker and a little darker until it just spirals out of control. But yeah, I mean, like, I thought it was exceptionally well measured. Wingard, Garrett, this team obviously know genre. They obviously love the genre. They know how to play with it. They know how to balance it on this razor's edge. I really like the guest. That's all I'm going to say.
I haven't seen it. It's on my list now.
Three.
Well, we don't have to cover number three very much for me because we've already discussed Kingsman.
Excellent.
Kingsman was Kingsman was floating number one in my list for a long time.
Wow, really? And
it dropped off recently. So
yeah,
that's all it needs to be said for mine. Okay. If you go back and listen to the first part of this countdown, you can hear us discuss in great detail Kingsman.
Yeah.
Okay, so number three for me is Reality, which is directed by, and get this, Glenn, because we spoke about this director, I think it was my obscurity on one episode. He directed Rubber. Winston, and we always
kind of
toss back the surname and realize we pronounce it incorrectly. Well, I did jump on the internet and found out the correct pronunciation. So it's Quentin Dupieux. There's no X, so we don't say the X.
You never do say the X.
We said it on the last one.
Did we?
Yeah, I think we went.
Oh, well, you made yourself X.
I think we just went back and forth and we just went, let's just give up because we've said it incorrectly.
Right.
Anyway, this is like his fourth film following Rubber. We had Wrong Cops. And there was another one somewhere in there that I can't remember. Reality, French-American co-production, a lot of sort of strange...
He didn't do Frank, did he?
No. The director that did Frank has just done something recently. It really surprised me.
Sorry.
Yeah, anyway, okay, that's off topic. It's very much in the vein of Rubber. It's a very odd, quirky comedy that borderlines on being pretentious, but to me is so smart and amazing that I feel like you either do love his films or you just don't like them at all. I don't think there's any middle. I think you either go, this guy's a fucking genius.
I agree.
Or you go, not for me.
Love it.
Not that I don't understand it, it's just not for me.
Yeah.
But Reality was exceptional. The film finished and I said to Danny, I'll just play this film back again because it pretty much ends where it starts.
Yeah.
And it was such a mind bender, but every moment of it, I was laughing and enjoying it. And by the end of it, I was just like, I need to know. I need to see it again. That's number three for me, Reality. Unfortunately, it hasn't been picked up for a local release at this stage. You can stream it on Netflix US. You can pick it up on Blu-ray from the US, but unfortunately, no local release here in Australia, which is a damn shame because it is a fucking amazing film. So over to you, Sean. Number three?
My number three, we've already covered. A Most Violent Year.
There we go.
Yeah.
Boom!
Need say no more.
Two.
All right, number two entered my list very recently, and it went straight to number two, and that was Turbo Kid. I fucking adored this film.
Turbo Kid.
Did you end up watching it?
I did watch Turbo Kid.
And you didn't like it?
I got 47 minutes into it, and I whipped through to the end because I couldn't.
Oh my God.
I needed to know what happened for the sake of
No, Glenn, don't hit him. No,
oh my God.
Glenn, settle down.
Look good.
You're upsetting Glenn, dude.
No, but I
I totally thought we'd be on the same.
No, I wanted to love it.
Cage.
Because I think it trailered well, and I think it looked great. I didn't find any, I wasn't interested in any of the characters at all.
Can you agree that Michael Ironside
Paul Sorvino? I will give you that, sir. But yeah, look, I really wanted to like it, and when it got to 47 minutes, I turned to Danny and I said, I can't do any more, how about you? She goes, I don't mind if you want to keep watching. She was shopping online.
How good was the girl?
She was the best thing about it.
There was a moment where I was like, your girlfriend's cooler than you.
She was the best thing about the movie. She was the best thing about
great.
The movie. She was the best thing. The only character I had any interest in.
I felt like a kid again. I love that it's made with a kid mentality by kids of the 80s who now are grown up and they've given us the violence that our adult selves want.
Yeah.
Right?
It was absolutely keeping
the sense of fun.
That's right. So it's BMX Bandits meets Mad Max with a shitload of gore, and I just
What is it actually about?
It's post-apocalyptic. Water is now the most valuable thing. It's about a kid whose parents...
Dry land is not a myth.
You want to get out of here, you talk to me.
It's about a kid whose parents were killed by a ruthless gangster that kind of dominates the land.
Batman.
Yep. And
so we've got Waterworld, so Batman, Batman
meets Mad Max of Waterworld.
And the
Beam Expanded.
Oh, but it's deliberately throwing back to all it of is, those it films. Is, it like, is, it's it a reference is. To all of those, absolutely intentionally. He meets up with a girl who it is revealed without...
No, don't say.
Okay.
So now we've got Wizard of Oz.
Kind of, actually.
He ends up taking on the gang's...
The Wicked Witch of the West.
not even a rivaling gang, because he doesn't really have a gang of his own. It's just sort of like...
He takes on Dennis Hopper from Waterworld.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's... But it is deliberately...
Right down to the eye patch, actually.
Yeah, that's why... But he was... He was a throwback to that character. Yeah. Like, everything about this film is the films you remember as a kid patched together. It's like an Astron 6 film. Like
it is like an Astron 6 film. Yeah. That's true.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so, and I noticed that popped up on Astron's top 5 for the year as well.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah. Yeah. And this blew my mind. I mean, I waited a long time to see it. I built it up in my head. And it's just...
We were going to go and see it a minute, but the session times were shit. They were playing... Funnily enough, they were playing this one in the morning. Remember? Like, Robot Overlords, and I think this in the mornings. We're like, we can't make it there that early. Not on a weekday.
Yeah. We're working, man.
But it lived up to my expectations, plus more. It's the only film this year that I stopped and pressed play straight away again.
Yeah.
Watched it twice in one hit.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not the only film that I've watched about two-thirds of and went through to the end just to see the end. I never would have done that in the past, but these days I'm getting older. And it's either I turn it off or I whip it through to the end just to see what happens at the end, because I just, you know, I wanted to see.
You want resolution.
Some gore and
you need closure.
So I got it. I saw it. Yeah, I saw it.
There you go.
So it's on to me. Okay, number two? So number two for me is Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which no one saw at the movie, seemingly.
Oh,
and
mate, no, but I'm spewing that I missed it.
It's out in January on Home End.
Yes.
And that's a great news. And
it is January.
Oh, it is January right now. It is, of course. It is available this month, I think on the 13th, through Fox, on DVD and Blu-ray. Initially, they were getting rid of the Blu-ray, but then they said, no, we're still in the Blu-ray. So thank Christ for that, because this film is stunning to look at. It's directed by Alfonso Gomez-Rejon, who directed the Town of the Dreaded Sundown remake.
Yep.
And outside of that, it's directed a couple of episodes of American Horror Story.
Wasn't too bad.
It was good. That meta sequel.
It was cool.
I quite liked it. Yeah.
Clearly, the director is a genre fan, because there is references to horror films throughout it. There's a lot of film references within it as well, so he's obviously a passionate cinephile. But the film's beautiful. It's a coming of age story, and it's one of the first coming of age stories I've seen in years where I can actually identify with the characters.
Yeah.
And these are people I've known, but this kid feels a lot like me growing up, and I'm like, I haven't really seen that on screen.
Yeah.
Decades, really. It's a beautiful story, man. Like, it is funny and it is heart wrenching. And it honestly blew me away.
I desperately wanted to see it by the time I decided to see it, it had finished.
It had lost it.
I remember I went earlier and saw this film a couple months before it was released, because I got an invite to Fox to go to a media screening, but it was a weird one where they did a Q&A afterward and they had to get you to fill out little surveys, because I wanted to know, how do we market this movie? And it was sort of at the end of it. It's like, well, actually, I don't know how you market it, because it's not the Paper Towns. What was the other one? The cancer one. The Fault in the Stars.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that. It's this other film that feels like it's a teen film, but it's not made for teens. It feels like it's made for 20-somethings and up. It was an odd beast.
It does kind of have the same audience, same demographic.
Yeah, but I think it's too smart for possibly the audience.
Maybe it's a stepping stone film, so they can go from Fault in Their Stars, Paper Towns, to this one. Like, it's like an evolution.
Maybe. It's tough, you know, I don't know, and I don't honestly know. And it was weird, because when they're lining up for Home End, I got an email from someone that works in marketing for Fox with my normal day job to say, this is coming out of Home End, do you have any ideas what we could do in order to promote this for Home End release?
And
They're at a loss as to how to market this film.
Well,
so it's that kind of film, I think, that may not be successful even on Home End initially, but it's going to be a film that within years to come will have such a solid and word
only,
of mouth.
Only last week, Margaret Pomerantz listed that in her top 5 guilty pleasures for the year.
a guilty pleasure.
Well, no, she
fuck
did
that.
Ah,
bitch.
Shut the fuck
she can
up,
go
mate.
Watch Ken Park again.
No, no, no. She said that she doesn't believe in guilty pleasures, but right. She was pressed on the question.
Okay.
And she said, okay, so films that I enjoyed that I probably shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And then she said that's in the
did
top
did she
five.
List Fury Road in there?
No.
No. She no. Probably put that in a normal top
I
10.
I think she did.
Doesn't feel so bad about film. Putting a post-apocalyptic genre film.
She put San Andreas in there.
Well, I still yeah. Haven't watched that yet.
Get the... Really?
Well, isn't she allowed to have fun with that?
No, no it just, I just think it it's just weird doesn't she... seem like a kind of film Margaret Pomeranz would go.
Well, then, hence guilty pleasure.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I don't like that she put it in a guilty. I like that she liked it and she recognizes it as a good film, but I don't feel like...
She didn't yeah. Categorize a guilty pleasure. She was
you
based
should,
on it.
Yeah, you should call her and tell her.
Fucking hell. Margaret!
She's not coming to my next screening of Ken Park that I'm doing in the living room with a bunch of mates. Fuck that. She can stay at home and watch it by herself.
How did this turn into a Margaret Pomeranz hate session?
I, bet, I love I bet, Margaret.
So
Margaret,
do I.
If you're listening,
David, come
I adore
around.
We'll your...
Watch it at my joint.
Okay, that got weird. Right. My number two, Sicario.
Yes.
Oh, Sicario, yes.
Yes. Hey, can I just say, I spoke to my dad on the phone today, and he went into this explanation of this thriller he watched recently, and it took about 5 minutes before he got to the title. And he kept describing it, but it was really good to start with. The first 5-10 minutes, I thought it was going to be great, and then it wasn't. The rest of it was shit. And he went on for ages. Like, what was it? What was it? And then he couldn't pronounce it. And he's like, Sicario. And I go, Sicario? And he goes, yeah, that's the one. I said, yeah, that was great. Great movie. And he goes, this, yeah, the first 10 minutes.
This was a toss-up between my number one and my number two.
Wow.
I couldn't make my... Like, could not have been more impressed, right? I was skeptical at the beginning, and then just, oh my God, just so well handled. Mm. A great exercise in point of view storytelling.
Yeah.
Emily Blunt is the cop who gets brought into this elite team that runs this drug enforcement agency that kind of crosses the border between America and Mexico legally, illegally, to do whatever they can to stifle the drug trade. She gets brought into this team. Is she's drip-fed the information. We're as lost as she is. We only ever discover anything as she discovers it. So we kind of like go along, hurtle along with her on this adventure that's dark and it's dangerous and it's foreboding and it's edgy and it feels grimy and gritty and horrible and destructive. And it's this great sense of tone. Just Emily Blunt's great in it. Josh Brolin is smarmy and vindictive and you love him. And Benicio Del Toro, as usual, just steals the show. It is masterclass in directing.
How amazing.
Intense. Absolutely intense.
It's so kind of... It's got that
really
kind of,
doesn't let go.
Yeah, it's got that kind of dark, sort of True Detective tone
yeah.
to it.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's very... It's very... Like, you're never anywhere that the director never wants you to be. Mm. He has you in the palm of his hand every single step of the way. It is dynamite.
How amazing is Emily Blunt these days? Like, she's
phenomenal.
Really...
She's really stepped it up, right?
Majorly.
Yeah.
Particularly like this in Edge of Tomorrow, where
yeah.
she's
yeah.
doing these really meaty, gutsy kind of
action roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Really exceptional actress.
What have you guys seen Sicario?
I
yeah,
haven't. No.
Right. Yeah, sorry.
Really
the
haven't
movies.
Seen it.
Once
wow.
again, missed its run.
Oh my God. Just...
That's out this month.
I think, yes, I think no. it's in... I think it's still playing at the Nova. And
it's only a matter of weeks away.
I would urge you
to catch it in a cinema.
I'll try. I've got a lot.
Otherwise,
to
just
to,
sit really close to the telly.
Yeah,
well.
yeah. yeah. With the volume will right up.
Oh God, yeah.
yeah.
Just pulse.
I get a sense. Just... Like, tell me if I'm off the mark. I get a sense that it's almost Paul Greengrassy in its action.
At times,
camera stays steady though. More
yeah.
than the time.
yeah.
I won't get dizzy.
yeah, yeah. Like, didn't get motion sickness.
It is in that. There's it's obviously an informed storyteller who's
yeah.
not making this stuff. You just tell there's a legitimacy to the things that these people are doing.
Yeah.
It's professional people doing professional things, and that's being informed by professional people on
okay.
the outside. So there is a real sense of verisimilitude to it.
Sure.
It feels like if this was actually happening, and it probably is, if this was happening, this is the way it would actually go down. Like,
right.
it's dark and it's dangerous. It's really, it's something.
It
really is something.
He threw big words in there. I didn't understand.
There was one word he said there.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was.
Meant.
I can't even repeat it because I was just thinking about it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was.
Verisimilitude?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'll tell you. This. You're good, boys. You're real good. But, you know, stick with me and you could be the best.
One.
number one. This is the moment. Drum roll. I knew you were going to do that, you motherfucker.
Well, I did stay home on New Year's Eve, so I've been waiting.
Do you know what? I was going to say right at the beginning, I don't want to hear any of that shit.
No Europe?
No Europe.
No Europe.
All right, this might surprise. What do you reckon my number one would be?
I have no fucking
idea. No, that's probably a stupid question.
Cats and Blues?
Yep.
Really?
Really?
Yep.
Did I just bang it? Bang!
Boom! How do you like that?
Yeah.
Take that,
holy
Jarrett.
Shit.
Yep. No. This
was it really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
it's written
for
right
you,
there.
Man.
See, Cats and Blues.
Really?
Number one.
There you
oh,
go.
Oh, yeah, we can't look at what's under.
Yeah, this is because this is the one film this year, and Jarrett knows damn well from the second I walked out the cinema.
He loved it.
This is a film that just fucking blew me away because, as I said on the last episode, I think it was the last episode we're talking about.
Yeah, we did. We recapped on Monster Fest.
And I've never seen anything like it. It's just a film that has never been done before, both stylistically, visually, conceptually. It's just out of this world. It's a mind fuck.
There you go.
Yep. And I just love it. It just earned itself number one the second I saw it.
Incredible.
Good for you,
man. I am blown away.
And I would urge anyone to keep following this film online because it's still doing the festival thing. As soon as it gets an official release of any kind, whether it's theatrical, home entertainment, digital, whatever, catch it.
I missed it and I was very upset that I missed it at this year's Monster Fest, but
yeah,
very much looking forward to it.
So that's it, my number one.
Cassic Blues.
There you go.
And I'm absolutely thrilled that it's a local film.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I had all of these big budget Hollywood films I could have chosen.
Yeah.
And it's the one that really stuck with me since I watched it.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah.
Can we guess yours? I think we both
know.
I think
this is my number one film for like, what was the last
6
months?
Every 6 months
at least. Since July when it was released. Yeah.
Shall we? Is it? It Follows.
It was.
There you go.
It is.
Two for two.
It Follows.
All right,
I'm not going to say too much because we spoke about it before.
But we reserved the conversation for now. So
It was. I saw it, went to a preview screening of it on a Tuesday night, and then I saw it again in a theater within about a week and a half. And I walked out of that movie and I was just completely in love with every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from the subtlety of the performances, the cinematography that was constantly moving, and it was just subtle movements.
The constant feeling of menace.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're constantly looking over your shoulder, even in the cinema. It's like you don't trust
anything.
You miss
the film if you do that, though.
Well, yeah. Well, unless I'm staring straight into the projection box. But
yeah.
I just, it was everything. Every minute that I'm watching this film, everything that's moving in frame, I'm like, oh my God, is this...
It's a very Jarrett film.
It is a very Jarrett film,
The score, the Disaster Piece score, which initially when I saw it the first time, I felt that maybe it was a little overused. The second time around, I was just in awe and I felt that it was...
Well, let's discuss the opening shot. How amazing is the opening shot?
One shot.
Yeah.
One circling 360 shot. It's incredible.
With this girl that's screaming bloody murder.
You
don't
no
know
idea.
Why. What's going on?
Yep.
She's in a regular David Lynch-y kind of neighborhood where everything
very blue
is
velvet, isn't
everything
it?
Is just perfect, and then there's this bloody...
And she's pretty much like in her, you know, her not underwear, but I think like a
she's distressed
nightwear,
and she's half dressed and she's distressed, screaming bloody murder, and the camera follows her,
just tracks 360
from one position,
around the houses. And then she moves inside the house, then comes out, takes the car, and then you watch the car headlights fade into the distance.
And you immediately think, well, this is a clever film. I can't wait to see what
it
goes.
Like, what the fuck is going on? It just, you have no idea. Yeah. And I love those movies. And I love the movies where you don't have any idea for a good portion of it, and they're able to explain it perfectly without... Look, I don't need to know the origins of this evil force, this entity of sorts.
It's not important.
It's not important.
No.
It's just the story of what's happening now. And as long as I've got a satisfying, you know, resolution to this part of the story, I'm more than happy. But fuck, I was in love with this movie.
Yeah.
And I still am. And I've watched this film 3 times now. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but 3 times for a film released in the last 6
That's
months.
Pretty,
and twice theatrically.
Pretty good.
And I'm desperate to watch it again. I'm so excited to see what this director will do next.
Cool.
He's done one film prior to this, The Myth of the American Sleepover. I haven't seen it yet.
Yep.
It's never been released locally. I am going to track it down, but again, it looks very different from this film. This is the first horror film he's directed. The previous one looks like it's kind of more of an indie American kind of.
Wow. Well, that was no surprise.
Yeah.
Number one,
it
there was no surprise.
Wow. exceptional.
It's been a long build. We've known that's coming from.
I know. Anyone that knows me knows that, that was going to happen.
So what I'm really keen to hear now is Sean's number one.
Yeah,
I
what is your number
one? I think
one?
You both know what it is.
Is it Mad Max Fury Road? It is
Mad Max. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a film that is just such a spectacle. Like, just 100 million miles an hour of fuel-injected adrenaline insanity to the eyeballs. It was just, if George Miller doesn't get a nomination for best director, there is
this will get a nomination for best film.
There is no fucking justice in this world.
This will have an Oscar nom for best film.
I am nominating this as number one as much for me as I am for my first year film lecturer, Andrew O'Keefe. If you're listening, this one's for you as much as it is for me. This film cannot be topped, and I don't care what you say about it, It Follows. It wasn't scary.
It was suspenseful. I just don't think you get it.
I was just poking a fight. But yeah, Mad Max, like, if you're like, you want to talk about reboots, you want to talk about rehashes, you want to talk about revamps, Reloaded.
This is
exactly how it should be done. And it puts every action film in the last 10 years completely to shame. Tom Hardy is amazing, even if he is a side character. Charlize Theron is amazing.
Quentin was incredible. You know,
yeah, right.
The little guy.
The stunts, the design and every aspect from...
Angus Sampson. Angus Sampson was in it too.
Jaw-dropping. Spectacle.
So, if this film does get nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards, do you think this may blow open the doors to future genre or action films?
I'm so glad you said it, because I'm going to put my money on this winning the Oscar. I reckon this will win Best Film. I do.
I think it's got a good chance.
I think it's got a nominate, because, I mean, they nominate 8 films generally every year now, 7 or 8 films.
That's a lot.
I don't know.
But well, you were wrong about that one before.
I know, like, I was wrong with Birdman.
That's right.
I don't know.
I think Birdman was a step in the right direction for being more open-minded to what can be nominated, right?
Yeah.
And I think Fury Road technically deserves it on every level. This is a game changer for action in general.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's a game changer.
But not for screenplay.
Right?
Screenplay doesn't just mean dialogue, it means action.
It
was an amazing screenplay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Look, I think it's very easy to forget. It's very easy to forget the films in the past that have been nominated, not necessarily for Best Picture, but certainly getting Oscar nominations for actors or whatever the case may be. Let's not forget Training Day. Let's not forget The Exorcist. There have been movies in the past that kind of push the boundaries of what the Oscars are about. If it wins something, it's not going to be that... I mean, Django, you know, it's not going to be that much of a stretch, I don't think, in the fact that it is a very solid genre piece. I think it's going to be a stretch because I don't think there's been such a full-throttle action film that's ever been nominated. And if it gets a nom, that's breaking the ground.
It'll be the first time ever Part 4 has been nominated.
Well, that's true as well.
And I think the most... Other than it is just simply impressive to watch, this is a film that's been... in the making for 20 years.
Yeah.
And we've known about it for 20 years. Yeah. Therefore, the anticipation was fucking monstrous. Probably more than Star Wars, I would say. Like, this build-up was huge.
It was huge.
Yeah. I agree, because we had the prequel buffer.
But then it came along, and it lived up to expectations.
I totally
agree. That in itself is incredible.
It's something to see, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's that 20-year gestation period that George Miller... It just comes through in every single frame and every single action and every single line. Mm. This guy has obviously been thinking about this for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he knows it inside out and back to front, and it shows. And that is as good as filmmaking gets, as you ask me.
We discussed the Oscar thing a minute ago, having obviously this is a revamp of a enormously popular Australian trilogy.
Yeah.
Do you think this is going to open up an opportunity for a fourth Alvin Purple film? Given that was also a very popular Australian trilogy.
Yeah, mate.
Alvin Purple,
yeah.
Alvin Rides
Well, they did Son of Alvin. They did Son of Alvin. Melvin, Son of Alvin.
This could be number four.
Young Einstein Part 2. Who knows?
Well, we welcome that one.
We welcome Young Einstein 2.
That was like one of our first podcasts.
Yes, it was. Yeah, that was Australia Day. Yeah.
Shit.
That's taking us back. But before we wrap that up, Fury Road, what do we think about the black and white version coming out?
What? I have not heard about this.
We don't know about this.
We don't know about this.
Okay, well, George Miller always had promise right through this that he's going to release it in black and white as well. Really? He was going to release that in the Blu-ray edition, so you'd get the option to watch it in both. Yeah. But they're releasing the black and white theatrically now.
Great.
What? So, yeah. So you get to watch it, but it's not just that they've just turned the color off. It is completely graded for black and white. Yeah. And apparently those that have seen it, I guess people that have been in his circle, have said it's something entirely amazing and completely a different visual experience.
It does happen every so often. Remember Frank Darabont did that with
The Mist. Did anyone watch that?
Yeah, I've got it at home.
Is it good, the black and white version?
Really good.
It is
a different film. Seriously a different film. It's not, like you say, it's not just that the colors were turned off.
Yeah.
It's everything. Just by virtue of the fact that just being desaturated, it just harkens back, particularly in a film like The Mist, that works because it's the 50s style monster movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
It harkens back to that and it does a really good job. Well, the Mad Max one, I'll be
curious. George Miller's been passionate about this and he's been banging this drum for a long time.
Right.
And I guess I was trying to work out whether not having it on the Blu-ray and doing a theatrical was just a cash grab.
Gimmick, yeah.
But maybe it's because it's such a big film, he wants people to see this as big as possible, you know, in this vision that he has. So I don't know, but I'm...
Can I say, as much as I absolutely adored Mad Max as the best film of the year, I think the Mad Max Blu-ray is probably the most disappointing release of the year.
Yeah?
Just straightforward, like, what's on it?
The special features are great.
Are they?
Yeah, the documentaries go forever.
Really?
Yeah. The production diary is incredible.
Is it?
It sits there with George Miller watching his screen as they flip cars and his reaction to the live action taking place.
Yes, I wanted everything. I wanted commentaries. I wanted the whole thing.
I guess this is a film that they will double dip and they will do. With the black and white cut. Makes sense.
The black and white cut will come, and I suspect that'll be a special edition with the original theatrical plus the black and white plus a bucket load of Peter Jackson-esque fucking content.
I will say though, we did get dicked locally because in overseas they did the Interceptor edition. It came with the Interceptor car. You get that version. It had any number of amazing versions. There was one with what's his name with the mask?
Nathan Jones?
No, sorry, the villain.
We do know his name.
Gus Van Sant.
Gus Van Sant. Good.
Angry Gus.
No, Immortan Joe.
Immortan Joe.
Yeah. With the mask. And all these special editions overseas and locally pretty much just got fucking. And then shit art. They went with shitty art.
Well, we did the Steelbook edition was good.
Oh, Future Pack. We didn't even get a Steelbook. It's similar Steelbook.
I got Steelbook.
No, the one you've got. That's what they call a Future Pack. It's not actually Steelbook because its hinges are different. There's all this nerdy
stuff. Oh, fuck that shit. It's
but basically, it went with the cheap one, luckily. Yeah, totally. Yeah, cheaper one because it was cheaper to produce. And it's Australian film.
Yeah.
And we kind of got
we get the back end of it.
Yeah, but it is what it is. It's the content on the disc that matters.
That's true. So that's it?
No, it's not. Because we're going to talk about the worst films of the year.
Hang on, honorable mentions first?
Let's do that. Because we're on that slant. So we've actually covered quite a few honorable mentions.
I think I've pretty much covered all my honorable mentions.
So the only ones that I will add to the list here is Bridge of Spies.
Yes.
Yep.
Which I think was fucking phenomenal.
Still haven't seen
Spielberg
it.
At his best. I think this is really, really a strong film.
Was that was a pretty good contender for top 10 and they kind of narrowly got knocked out for you?
Yeah, really narrowly. In fact, I think Catsick Blues came along and that's when Bridge of Spies dropped out. We covered the rest. The only one we haven't covered was actually Insidious 3.
Loved it. Yeah.
That was just really, really good horror film. And
the best,
clever.
I actually think the best of the three films.
At the time I saw it, I thought it's probably my second favorite, but on reflection, definitely the best.
Yep. Second time around, I think it moved up to be the best in the franchise for me. And it was, what's his name? The director.
Lee Whannell.
Lee Whannell's directional debut.
Yeah.
He's obviously written a bunch of these films, but the first time he stepped behind and actually directed a feature.
Good for him.
So that's all I'll add because we covered the rest during the actual list.
I've got 99 Homes, which had Andrew Garfield and Michael Shannon. Incredible drama, really performance based. I had The Lobster, which was really bleak and funny with Colin Farrell.
Girlfriend's mum's so mad at me because she went to see it and she loved it. She tried to talk to me about it one time and I wasn't very reciprocated. And now she's really upset. So I have to see this film.
I think you'd enjoy this.
I have to see this film. She's going to kill me.
It's unusual. And Nina Forever, which we saw at Melbourne Film Festival, which really just got bumped out.
That would probably make my top 20.
Yeah.
Probably 20, around the 2019.
Makes my top 15. But what about you? Any others?
Mine were honorable mentions, Ex Machina.
Yep.
I thought that was in the top 10 for quite a while. Avengers Age of Ultron, yep, which I really, yep, dug. I love superhero films.
And you love CGI.
Sucker.
No, it's good. And I enjoyed that.
Yeah,
and better than the first. I actually enjoyed it more than Avengers. Yeah. Yeah. More than the first.
Yeah, for sure.
And Ant-Man as well. That, yeah, was
excellent. Excellent. Good. I'm glad that's in there.
Yeah.
All right, so we have to move on to the worst because I'm looking for
one. No,
just to clarify, we've only picked the one worst.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I will. I had two time, but I after you and I had a discussion earlier off the mic, I'm going to drop one and just go with the other.
What was the one you dropped? Just mention it. Don't talk about it.
Agent 47.
Agent 47.
Yeah. Hitman. Yeah.
Hitman. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was bad, but I've seen worse.
Right, so we're not going to mention it.
Okay. Move
it's
on.
It's never been mentioned.
No.
So what's the one that you have chosen?
AWOL 72.
Oh, I remember you talking about this.
He fucking
this
hated
is
it.
A straight to DVD.
Is this Luke Goss?
Luke Goss and the RZA.
RZA.
Oh, yeah.
This is as bad as it gets.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's two films. It feels like two films spliced together in the middle with both with both sides making no sense to each other. Like,
right,
it just takes a whole new direction, introduces new characters that were never there before for no reason. The story changes. It's just terribly acted. RZA's fucking atrocious.
The RZA is
atrocious.
He is not very good, and whether he's behind the camera or
he's not
about,
in a good.
He's not a good director.
No,
and
stick
he's
to the
not
music.
A, yeah, just do what you do best.
Or
stick
your cameos.
Yeah,
and, you know.
I take my hat off to you for trying to stretch your wings and all that kind of stuff.
But
it's not. But
in this one, he plays like a really sensible FBI agent kind of guy, trying to be sensitive and shit. But he still looks like a gangster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, terrible.
Terrible. What's yours?
Okay, so I did debate this one a little.
Yeah.
There's a few films, but I went with this particular film. Toni Collette, Drew Barrymore, Miss You Already.
Holy shit.
I'm
wow.
a sucker for old women's movies,
yeah,
as
yeah.
I like to call them. You just watched Beaches the other night. Beaches is an exceptional film. Beaches is the film that Miss You Already wants to
the
be.
Benchmark.
It is so fucking not.
Wow.
Toni Collette's character, the story is the two of them grow up from children. Into adults as best friends, and then Toni Collette's character gets diagnosed with cancer while Drew Barrymore's character is having a baby.
Beaches Redux.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's essentially Beaches, but rubbish. Toni Collette's character is so fucking self-involved and just awful. I had no empathy or sympathy for her whatsoever at any point in the film. The fucking cinematography on this film, It's always Steadicam, but it's shaky Steadicam. It has no place in a drama. They're having fucking tea at a restaurant or a cafe, and the camera's fucking moving like Steady Eddie's controlling the thing. It was disgusting. I was bored to tears. I watched it with my mum and my wife, and the three of us all hated it. My mum said, "How long's this got to go?" I said, "It's got another 20 minutes." Another 20 minutes! And it really was that. It was just painful.
Wow.
And here's the thing. Here's the kick. You know, we discussed earlier about the, you know, either, you know, people that really liked something or it's you just didn't get it. I got asked on Monday, "So you watched Miss You Already on the weekend. What did you think?" By my department, girls I work with, predominantly girls. And I said, "I fucking hated it." Yeah, it was, and I went into
did they
a few
say,
things
but
I didn't
you're
like
right?
about it. That's what they said. "Oh, you wouldn't understand because, you know, you're a guy. It's you
fuck
know." It's a, and I'm like, hello.
You're doing nothing for the cause.
Hello. I love Ricky and the Flash, and I heard you talk shit about that movie. It's fucking smart and clever and emotional and real, but Miss You Already is not. Miss You Already is everything that is wrong with cinema today.
And I'd love this to see them take you on in a fucking chick flick quiz.
Oh, fuck. I will own them.
Yeah.
But Miss You Already, honestly,
it
was
alive.
Just rubbish.
Yeah.
Nothing good about it. I watched an interview the other night. It was a repeat of Jimmy Fallon, and Drew Barrymore was on there as a guest. And she's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love Drew Barrymore. I've got a lot of time for her. And they talk about the film briefly. And they show one scene from the film. And the scene they show is hardly an emotional scene. It's one of the funnier moments. And it's about the only good moment. I'm like, they really chose that clip wisely because the camera's held steady for about all of 1 minute. And it actually is a little bit funny. But fucking awful
right.
film.
But what would you know? You're a guy. So let's
exactly.
move on. To
moving on.
My worst film of the year. This is going to be controversial.
It follows.
My worst film of the year was Straight Outta Compton.
Okay.
No, I can buy that because I didn't think much of it at all.
I
enjoyed it.
Straight Outta Compton was just the most nonsensical, hypocritical garbage to hit the screen this year. This rise to fame of these drug dealing, armed gangsters who throw their arms up in the air, claiming to be victims all the time, when that's exactly what they are. They're criminals. It's just, you know, the first half of the film, the first hour of the film is this uncumbered, resistance-free rise to fame for these, like I say, drug dealers and arms dealers. There's nothing, there's no resistance that is offered to them for the first half hour, where they just gallop towards superstardom. Like, just lazy script writing, just characters are brought in for no reason, just to offer some kind of shallow crap fucking depth, and then they're just forgotten about when
the
script
was... Even like the bit with Snoop Dogg?
Oh, it was just...
it was nothing but a self-interest puff piece. Like, yeah, self-promotional, because you can't produce your own biopic.
Oh, no, that's right. Just self-indulgent.
Not only that, like, where's the history of Dre's violence against women?
Yeah.
Because he's a wife beater.
Yeah, they're cherry-picking what they want to serve the story. This isn't a fucking biography. This isn't even, like, Tom Hardy's film Legend. That takes the legend of these two criminal brothers and then portrays it in this kind of Guy Ritchie-esque way. But the title says it all. It's the legend of the Kray brothers. Yeah. It's not the facts of the Kray brothers. Where Straight Outta Compton, you kind of feel like they're trying to tell you the facts, when it's just transparent horseshit. It was awful, it was hypocritical, and it was easily, in my money, the worst film of the year.
Well, I don't disagree with that.
Do you think it'll get an Oscar nomination for
Hair
and Makeup?
Of course it will,
because Paul Giamatti. Yeah. I'm a big fan of it.
Paul Giamatti's hairpiece in that film.
No, but Christ. Not only that, Love and Mercy, he's like this fucking Hair and Makeup.
He was great in Love and Mercy.
He was, but so good. But the hair was as ridiculous
and
as Compton.
Underwhelming in this. But I enjoyed it. Compton. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, oh, no, Giamatti had his moments. Like, the moment
where they got
pinned on the street and he came out and had a go at the cops. Great acting there.
Oh, like, my God, that was just like all these dudes just standing in the street corner just like, hey, man, like, we're just here eating sandwiches, and the man comes running and he's like putting his boot in my neck, man, and he's like pressing me in the concrete, and I don't deserve this, man. I'm not doing anything wrong. And then the next scene has them in a hotel room with semi-automatic rifles pointing them in the guy's face. Like a criminal. It's horseshit. It's awful. It's a terrible film.
And they were having sex with these guys. Girlfriends,
yeah,
too,
exactly.
They pointed the weapon.
They're just horrible people claiming to be innocent. It was terrible.
Well,
terrible.
A worst film of the year.
A lot of fun.
A worst film of the year should be accompanied by a shitload of passion, and that's what that was.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was. I got real angry there, didn't I?
Yeah, that was great.
At least they held the camera steady.
So that pretty much brings us to the end of that. That was fun.
That was worth it.
There you go.
That was two episodes.
Two episodes of...
of everything.
Dynamite.
Yeah.
Dynamite. Fisticuffs. Almost came to blows.
It was passionate.
It was. So, that's it. First... Almost first episode of the year. Technically, yeah. Second.
First two episodes of the year.
Episodes. We'll stitch that together. Wrapping things up. That's... let the new year begin. Anything you're excited about this year?
Gary Marshall's third chapter.
Mother's Day, the follow-up to Valentine's Day, and what's the other one? New Year's Eve. Oh,
jeez. I guess I can't do Father's Day, because you've had the Robin Williams Billy Crystal one, and you've had the Astron 6 one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine having the third one.
We need a Gary Marshall one, but anyway. Yeah.
I'm excited for Tarzan.
Yeah, that looks cool. Bill Murray? Bill Murray doing, was it the ape in it? What's his name?
I don't remember that. The John Cleese act? No, that's from fucking...
Yeah,
I don't remember. Are we talking about Jungle Book? We're talking about Jungle Book.
No!
Yeah. No. Talking about. I'm looking forward to the live-action Jungle
Book. Jungle
Book
does look great.
Yeah, John Favreau.
Yeah, that looks really good.
The trailer played well.
Sorry, I'm getting confused.
After Chef, I'm a big fan of John Favreau, but after Chef, I'll watch anything he does.
Yeah, absolutely. Hundreds of films, loads of podcasts, lots of giveaways, plenty of videos, events, and a shitload more. It's going to be a good year.
It's going to be amazing.
I'm excited.
There you go.
Cool. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Catch you next time.